Hi everyone, welcome back to the Pathfinder 101 podcast. This is Swanik Jaikumar. And, as you know, in this podcast series we try to examine different professions and career paths by talking to experts in those fields. If you're new to this podcast, I encourage you to listen to the introduction episode to get an idea for what this podcast is about. Today's guest is Mr. Will Moore, Senior Consulting Analyst at Accenture. Thank you so much for your time, Mr. Moore. Let's jump right into the questions.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good.
First of all, thank you very much for meeting with me today. So as a high school student, understanding various professions and career paths seems to be a daunting task because there's so many different choices available and we have very little exposure to these different choices. And I would like to take you back to your high school days when you were thinking about college, career, et cetera. And I'm assuming you're probably in a similar situation like me with a bit of confusion and uncertainty in choosing the exact right path. So after a few years, you have a successful career today. And I'm sure you learned a lot during this journey. So I'm just trying to garner that information.
Yeah, absolutely, man. That sounds like a great idea.
Right. So my first question is, what did you want to become when you were a high school student? And what made you consider that particular career at that time, like parents or mentors or stuff like that?
Dude, I had no idea. Honestly, I was thinking about like a million different things. I wanted to be a doctor for a little bit. I was like, being a lawyer would be great. Joining the military would be awesome, which was the path I wound up taking. I thought about being a lawyer. Like I went through every single, you know, I feel like some people came into high school, especially in a place like St. Mark's, which is full of so many like wicked high achievers. People come in with like a, look, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to get into Harvard. I'm going to study biology. I'm going to go to Yale med school. Does Yale have a med school? I don't know. I'm going to do my residency at Stanford and I'm going to be I'm going to be the world's best neurosurgeon, or I'm going to Harvard Law or whatever. And I was just like, dude, I want to do so many things. I'm interested in so many things. So I'm going to take an opportunity in college to kind of figure it out. And so I don't know if that's, I guess the cut and dry answer is I didn't know. It changed every day. It changed every week.
So I noticed that you studied political and international affairs with classical studies as a minor at Wake Forest. So yeah. How did you choose the college and the major? And did someone like a parent or a teacher influence or guide you into choosing that?
Yeah, my parents or teachers did not really guide me. My parents were really cool about like letting me study whatever I want at Wake. To answer your first question, how I picked my major, I started as a finance major. I just, because it's what a lot of my friends were doing and I didn't really know. And I figured finance would apply to a lot of different corporate jobs. If I wanted to go into law, I figured out my first semester that I wasn't going to be a doctor because I got out of Chem 101 with like a C+. So I was like, okay, this probably is not the good application of my strengths. And I was a finance major. And then later on in my college career, I did not like being a finance major, by the way. Later on in my college career, I had a little more clarity on what I was going to do. I knew at that point that I was going to go to officer candidate school for the Marine Corps. And to be an officer in the military, you need a bachelor's degree in something, but it doesn't have to be anything in particular. You just need a four-year bachelor's degree. So I wasn't doing super well in finance because I wasn't taking my college academics as seriously as I should have. And I was like, I don't even like this. I don't like going to class. Like, so I need a bachelor's in something. So I have always kind of been interested in international affairs. I keep a good lookout on politics and stuff. And I was like, you know, these are cool classes. I took like a conflict resolution, international conflict resolution. I took a constitutional law class. And I was like, okay, I like doing the reading. I like going to these classes. I need a bachelor's in something. So it's going to be poli sci. And then the classical studies, I took a class with two or three of my friends called Greek and Roman Comedy that was going to be like an easy A. And I loved the professor. So I took his Greek myth class the next semester. And I loved it again. And I remember I took like a Greek epic class too from another really good professor. And then at that point I was like a second semester sophomore in college. And I was like, dude, I'm like three classes away from a minor. So I just took three more classes. And the only thing that sucked is I had to take like a 300 level classics class that was definitely like way out of my intellectual, way out of my intellectual wheelhouse. But it was a great experience. And it's like a fun little trivia thing for people. They're like, whenever I've been in job interviews, they're like, you minored in classics? And I'm like, yes, I'm very well read. Yeah, but I really just kind of stumbled into it, but it was a great minor. I really enjoyed it.
So what different factors did you consider, especially when choosing your college, like private versus public and stuff like that?
Yeah, I knew I wanted to be at a school with really solid academics. I think most people that come out of St. Mark's want to be at a school with really solid academics. You know, I wanted it to be a school that people have heard of that was a good, I knew I was probably didn't have the grades for the Ivy League schools, but I wanted to be in the South with good weather for sure. That was one of them. I loved that it had D1 sports. You know, it was a cool part of the experience. You know, I know if you go to like Williams or Washington and Lee, you know, they've got cool sports cultures there for Division 3, but it's cool to have like a Division 1 sports. This is embarrassing to admit, but I was 18. Like, I was like, okay, I want a school where Greek life is a big part of it. And I want to be in a fraternity like my dad and my cousins, my brother were. And so I knew that that was part of it. And I didn't want to be at like a huge school. So like, I was thinking about going to UT as well, but I was like, I'm just going to get lost. There's like 50,000 people grad and undergrad. Like it was scary and intimidating. And I started first grade at St. Mark's. So I was way comfortable in a class size of like 85, 90. Like that felt good for me. So going to a school, Wake is like, I cannot be enough of an evangelist for Wake Forest. Like it checked all those boxes. It was an amazing, amazing experience. And also you'll figure this out. Like you'll start going to these accepted students days and things can like change when you're there. I went to the Wake Forest accepted students day with my dad and the weather was perfect. Like once I went to the campus, if you've ever seen the Wake Forest campus, it's gorgeous. Like I looked at it and I was like, I'm going to school here. Checked it off.
So after graduation, you worked in various roles in the U.S. Marine Corps for about 5 years. What made you transition into the corporate world and specifically Accenture? And how do you handle this transition?
Yeah, so I kind of knew going into the military that it was going to be a 4 year, it was going to be a 4 or 5 year ride for me. I did not, there were times where I was like, hey, I love this. I loved it. I'm going to make a career out of this. Like I'm going to be a Marine officer for the rest of my life or the rest of my, you know, for the next 20 years. And eventually I got to the point where I was getting really sick of moving, not having control over where I was going to move, not having as much control over where, like, you know, deployments, like I was going to be gone. You know, I'm in a serious relationship. Like I love my family. Like I didn't know if I could be gone for like the periods of time that I was going to be required to be gone. And some people do a great job and have wonderful family experiences. It just wasn't for me. It also, I had kind of left at that point. I was promoted to captain. I was kind of leaving the world where I got to interact with like young Marines day to day at like a super, at, you know, I want to say like an intimate level, like where I'm going to be out in the field leading Marines. Like that's the coolest part of being an officer in the military is leading young men and women. And it was getting more to the point where I was going to be like a staff. It's going to be a lot of years before I got to do that again. Like I was going to be a staff officer. I was going to be working for a colonel. I was going to be making PowerPoint slides and doing Excel. And I was like, if I'm going to do that for a living, like there are places where I can get paid a lot more to do that. And I don't have to show up in a uniform every day. And I don't have to live in parts of the world that maybe I don't want to, like the California desert or like the North Carolina swamp. So I knew I wanted to be in management consulting at that point, because the one thing I do love about the military is, you know, I got to do something a little bit different every day. I get bored pretty easily. And I knew management consulting, I could move from project to project, from client to client, and always have something fresh, always have something interesting to be doing. So I knew that's what brought me to consulting. And what brought me to Accenture in particular was they have a program for transitioning military officers that allows you to come in at a higher level than you would as like a fresh college graduate. So I applied to that program. I got in and started working. It's coming up on about a year working in consulting. So yeah. And like I said, the money's better, and consulting has changed a lot since COVID. We're not on the road as much as, I don't know how much you know about the industry, but it used to be a 50 weeks a year getting on the plane type job. And that's really changed. I probably travel once a month now. Yeah, that's the junior military officer program brought me to Accenture, because I knew I wanted to be at a big name consulting firm. And again, my grades kind of bit me. I didn't go to an Ivy League school or have a super high GPA. So McKinsey, Bain, and Boston Consulting Group were off the table, but Deloitte, Pricewaterhouse, Ernst & Young. And if I need to explain any more of this, please let me know. But Accenture, Deloitte, Pricewaterhouse, those kind of tier 2 consulting firms were all on the table for me. And Accenture was the one that had a program that let me come in at a level commensurate with my experience. Was that too long, too windy of an answer?
No, that's great. So, and you were talking about earlier in college, you were debating between like first becoming a doctor and then a lawyer, and then you dabbled in some finance too. How did you overcome the doubts and hesitation you would have experienced during that time?
I think I kind of got inspired. Like I was looking, we had to do like required career preparation stuff, you know, starting like your freshman year. And I was like, none of this stuff sounds like that exciting to me. None of this stuff is lighting me up. No, nowhere. You know, I have, and most of my like college buddies are in investment banking or are recovering investment bankers, as I like to say, or, you know, work in personal finance. I have a couple of buddies who are lawyers, and I was just like, man, dude, I'm 21 years old. Like, I don't want to sit in an office. Like, none of this sounds like something I want to spend 8 or 9 or 10, or if I'm in investment banking, like 14 hours a day doing. Sat down and made a list, and I was like, all right, I want to do something hard. I want to do something that's difficult. I think it's important to do difficult things in your life. I want to do something that's kind of cool, like that's going to have like some adventure to it. And I want to do something that's a little bit service oriented. Cause again, I'm kind of a big believer that to live a quality life, you have to be of service to other people in some kind of way. And all of that kind of filled out. It dovetailed well with the military. You know, I was a good athlete in high school. I was not such a good athlete in college, a lot of intramural softball, but, and I knew that I was capable of doing something tough. And I was like, all right, what's tough? Like the Marines is tough. And I sat on that for a couple months really. And then like one day I saw like a commercial, one of those like cheesy recruiting commercials where the voiceover is like this. And I was watching like golf or something like I'm doing right now. And I was just like, all right, I'm going to do it. And I called the North Carolina officer recruiter for the Marine Corps. And I was like, hey, my name's Will. I'm a student at Wake Forest. I want to be an officer in the Marines. And they're like, all right, say less. And that's what kind of led me on the path. I remember the moment because I was home for summer. Yeah.
So given your current exposure to various different fields, what would you do differently if you could go back in time?
Okay. I'll say that I'm super happy with my career choices that I made. I think I made the exact right call for me at that point in my life. And it's early to tell with the transition into consulting, but I'm very happy in consulting. I think I'll be here for a couple of years. I think I probably would have started earlier. I don't feel like the military is an option that's really like bandied around at St. Mark's a ton. I'm sure there's a couple, there's one or two kids every year that go to the Naval Academy or go to West Point or go to Air Force. I probably would have tried to get into the Naval Academy if I had known that I was going to be a Marine officer, just because I think, one, that school is free. Two, it's a pretty wonderful, prestigious, well-respected school. So I would have looked at the service academies a little harder. I think I would have, and this is less applicable to a high school student, but I probably would have looked at my transition out of the military a lot sooner. I maybe would have taken the GMAT or the GRE and tried to get into an MBA program before I went into consulting. So that is out there for any of you who are military officers or want to be. I would have thought about that a little sooner. But really, if I could change one thing, I would have taken my academics a little more seriously at St. Mark's, and I would have taken my academics a little more seriously in undergrad, because you close more doors than you think at an age where you're not at 15, 16, 17, and then in college, 19, 20, 21. If you rock out and make awesome grades, you leave a lot more doors open, if that makes sense. And it might be partly just the industry that I'm in that's academic, that has a lot of focus on academic achievement and hiring, but you're always going to have the opportunity for an open door if you've done your absolute best you can academically. And I don't think I realized that at age 16 when I was super focused on like my extracurriculars. I was super focused on my social life, and I probably didn't do the extra work that I needed to do to get, you know, rather than graduate with a 3.5, which I did, graduate with a 3.8, a 3.9.
So this next question is multi-part. So what are the most important skills you think you learned from your St. Mark's education? And then what are the most important skills you learned in college and then in the U.S. Marine Corps? And then fourth part, what skill do you wish you had learned before you joined college or the Marine Corps?
Yeah, absolutely. I think from St. Mark's, you just cannot understate how amazing that place is at teaching you like how to think and how to communicate. Like I credit St. Mark's first and foremost with like my ability to write. I know like teachers like jam it down your throat. Like, you know, you're going to come out of St. Mark's writing so much better than your undergrad. Like, it's true. I still rely on the things that I learned from English teachers and history teachers and Ray Westbrook, my journalism teacher, all the time. Like, teaching clear, effective written communication, St. Mark's does amazing at. And I think also learning how to learn. You're in an environment with teachers. Every single teacher cares. Every single teacher is invested in the students. And it makes you so much more confident to have started a deep learning process at age like 14 or 15. Now I'm 27 years old and I still feel like I learned how to learn at St. Mark's. And that is, I think, probably you would argue the crucial skill in your career. And really in life. Then in college, I think I learned how to interact with people. I think I learned how to speak well, how to like forge relationships, because you can't underestimate like when you're living out from home for the first time, if you didn't go to boarding school, which neither of us did, you're living away from home for the first time and your core relationships that for the first 18, 17 years of your life have been with your family. Now you have to forge core relationships of friends. And you have to learn, you know, sometimes through trial and error, what makes a good, how to maintain relationships and how to speak to your friends, how to treat your friends. Like you learn by failing in a lot of ways, because the people that you're with in college, they really become your family surrogates. Unless you go to SMU or go to UTD and stay at home, like you need to build a family because you're calling your parents once or twice a week, maybe. And so I'd say building relationships was the key skill that I learned in college. And then in the Marines, I would say I learned how to lead. I was taught how to lead. And I was taught how to lead by what I consider to be like the finest leadership, the finest leaders in America, which is Marine officers and Marine staff non-commissioned officers. Like, I just got to watch a bunch of wildly high performing people go about their days and bust their ass to do really, really hard things. And I am grateful for that lesson literally every day, because that's not a skill everybody has. That's not a skill that people learn in high. There's not a class. You guys might have a leadership class. Marty Stegmuller might be teaching a leadership class at St. Mark's now. I don't know.
If I could just ask a quick question, what were some of the key takeaways that you took away from the leadership in the U.S. Marine Corps?
It starts with taking care of people. And that's super cheesy, but it's 100% true. People will follow you. I made it a point when I was a platoon commander in the Marine Corps to know deeply the people that I was responsible for, who their wives were, where they were from, where they came from, what their backgrounds were. People notice that stuff. If you, you know, walk by Lance Corporal, whoever, who's 19 years old, just got to the unit, and you're like, hey, man, you still with a girlfriend? Or, hey, Corporal Randall, how's the truck going? Like, you know, you still working on that clunker out in the parking lot? Like, people notice that thing. You invest in them at a personal level. And I would say the second was having a recognition of not having to be told how to do something. There was an expectation in the Marines where it was like, hey, I need this done. I don't care how you do it. Just get it done. That's not something that people I've found in the corporate world, and certainly in high school and college, people aren't prepared to do. They want a step-by-step guide. They're comfortable with like, oh, well, if I messed up, I can point to the guide. It's like, no, that's not how you think about it. That's not how you frame it. I need you to do this. And it's a binary yes or no if it happens. Does that make sense? Did I explain that well? Like,
yeah.
having a task and a purpose and giving that to somebody and saying go is so much more valuable. I would always tell my, like the guys who are directly under me supervising three or four people, I would be like, look, dude, I need a sandwich. I'm not going to tell you how to make it. And I don't mean this literally. I wasn't happy to make me sandwiches, but I was like, look, I need a sandwich. I'm not going to tell you how to make it. Just come and let me know when the sandwich is done. So there was a fourth part to your question too.
So if there are any skills that you wish you had learned earlier than when you learned it.
It's hard to answer just because, you know, these things sometimes I feel like come to you at a part in your life where you need them. But on a practical level, I'll say, like, for a sheer takeaway, like, learn Microsoft Office. Know how to do Excel and PowerPoint and Word and stuff like that. You're going to need that in every job. And saying you know Excel, saying you know PowerPoint, like, yeah, you know how to make, like, learn it deeply. I wish I had known that earlier. It would have saved me a ton of time. And I wish I had learned a little earlier how to kind of project an air of professionalism. Like, I came into the corporate world and I came into the Marines, like, wanting everybody to be my best buddy and speaking pretty informally. And I needed, you know, because I was like a freaking frat boy from college. And I wish I had changed my mindset a little bit before I entered the working world. And I had to take some lumps to learn that lesson that people, not everybody is like you, because you leave a St. Mark's or you leave your college and you're leaving a very homogenous environment where everybody is very similar. Like, we can talk diversity all we want, but at the end of the day, it's a bunch of wicked intelligent kids who are all dressed the same and who 75% of them come from similar backgrounds, right? So there is so much more diversity out, and it's all boys. So they're getting exposed to as much diversity as possible in your social life, in your extracurricular life, I'd say is critical, because I didn't know how to work for a woman at first. Like, it's a little bit different. There's different communication styles, not that anyone's any less capable, but you just have to approach some things differently.
So I think we'll transition into understanding more about your current job in Accenture and before in the U.S. Marine Corps. So what did a typical, like, day or week look like for you both now and before you joined?
Days in the Marines were I mean, wildly changed, but you can basically cut it down to like whether we were in the office or whether we were in like a field or forward deployed environment. And I would come in both times, come in super early, do your physical training in the morning. That's a habit I've kept, but you know, get up early, do your physical training, go for your run, hit the gym, do your weights, do your, I would exercise with my Marines twice a week too, take them on runs, take them on hikes, whatever, shower up, come into the office. I'm a big believer in like purging all your inboxes, purging all your tasks to do early in the morning. Generally in the office, we'd have some meetings. I'd talk to the CEO. I'd talk to some of the commanding officer. I talked to some of my bosses, try to run some kind of continuing education class for the Marines, whether that was weapons handling, vehicles, convoys, whatever, and try to get them out. We would go through our tasks for the day, whether that's repairing vehicles, you know, going out to the range, shooting, and then, you know, try to get them out as early as possible. And then in a forward deployed environment, it's really hard to say because or in a field environment, you know, you're trying to accomplish the mission every day. And that changes hour by hour. Here at Accenture, most of my job, it's very similar. I still get up early. I still work out in the morning and I come and purge. And then generally I kind of try and structure my day between what I need to talk to clients about and what I need to talk to an internal team about. So I'll start when I'm fresher in my brain, I'll try to schedule my client meetings at that point. And that's getting requirements from clients, what they need for a current project, getting my requirements to them. Like, I need this to fix for you. And sometimes it's presenting, hey, as our consulting firm, we built this for you. What do you think? What's your feedback? How can we change this? And then the second part of my day, I generally try to spend with our team. I work in IT consulting. Accenture is mostly an IT consulting firm. So a team of engineers, making sure that they have the requirements they need, getting updates from them on various architecture processes. And then I try to keep the end of my day for like personal development stuff. So learning new skills, networking with other people at the firm. Sometimes I just knock it off and turn on TV. But I work from home probably 80% of the time, which is a huge blessing. I'm at home right now. I go into the office about once a week, and like I said, travel maybe once a month. So it's nice to, you know, I wake up, make breakfast for my significant other who works in an office, and see her out, and then I kind of have the house to myself all day in this little office.
So earlier you mentioned networking. How important or what role does networking play in your job, both like within the firm and outside?
So in my industry, it's you live and die by it, honestly. Like it is, if somebody is not succeeding in the consulting world, it is probably because their network is not great. And it is such a key. And for folks looking for jobs, like I cannot emphasize it enough how critical it is to be an active, responsive networker, because part of it is in consulting. If we're going to talk industry specific, like once your project ends, the project that you're on, it's your responsibility to find yourself a new one. And it is real hard. There's a lot of people who want a limited number of projects just because like there's a lot of people out in the world that want a limited number of jobs. And so if you're just firing out your resume saying, hey, I would love to work on this, like you're going to get lost in the shuffle. But if you're able to cultivate a network of people where you're like, hey, I want to work in a healthcare security project, your network is going to know, hey, I know somebody who's looking for somebody to fill that role. And it's the same thing in jobs. Like I tell people, if you want to work, you say you want to work in investment banking, like you need to be cultivating a list of people and a set of relationships who work in investment banking, because you know what, a lot of people want to do that job. A lot of people want to work in big law, in the lawyer world. A lot of people want to work at the big four if they're accountants. Like your resume is not as unique as you think it is. Even if you used to be a U.S. Marine, or even if you went to a school like St. Mark's, there's a million people, and people are going to go with who they know. People are going to go with individuals that they have some kind of relationship with, even if it's through someone else. So I don't want to say your network is your net worth, because that makes me like cringe, but you are doing yourself a massive disservice if you are not actively pursuing relationships with people in the industry you want to work in.
How do you maintain a work-life balance? And what is your take on that concept?
Great question. First of all, I think you should be doing first of all, a job that you like going to. And I think work-life balance is a lot easier to maintain if you have a passion for what you're doing, because then working 10 hours as opposed to 8, like, isn't a big deal because you like your job. And I think if you're having to pull overtime and you're like, oh, this sucks, man, maybe you should reconsider your career. Because if you're going to St. Mark's, you're going to be high earning enough potential where you're not like probably worried about keeping the heat on or making the grocery bill. So like, you have the luxury of choosing a job that you're going to love. So I think you need a work-life balance more if you don't like your job. That being said, for a guy like me, who's a pretty intense person and who can throw themselves into something, I have to schedule time to decompress and time to get out of the way. You need to be self-aware enough to recognize when you're getting burnt out. Like, that is a check-in that you need to be making with yourself weekly. I think, like, am I doing right by myself? Or am I giving everything I've got to this position? Because you know what? A truth that I don't think is super sexy to put out is, like, if you want to be super successful and if you want to make a lot of money, if you want to work in a job that people are like, wow, that's awesome, if you want to start a company, like, you're going to have to work hard and your work-life balance is going to suck. Like, that's an unfortunate reality. There's not a lot of wicked high paying or wicked interesting jobs out there that are like 9 to 5, 40 hours a week. If you know of some, let me know. Like, if you know of a way to get rich working 9 to 5, like, let me know. I would love to know, because I just don't think that's out there. So I think you need to prepare yourself if you want to be very successful, you're going to have to prepare yourself to work pretty hard. And maybe your work-life balance is going to suck for a while. But you also got to remember, you're living one life. And if you're getting to the point where you're just like, I hate what I'm doing and I'm working too hard, then you got to have the courage to make a change, I think, because that's no way to live. It's, you spend a third of your life at work. So if you hate it, like, I feel really sorry for you.
You're talking a little bit about compensation in general, without going into specifics. How well does your current profession compensate in comparison to other professions?
In comparison to other professions?
Yeah.
I would say consulting is pretty well compensated, especially at the higher levels, especially if you're going to be at an elite consulting firm. You're going to be doing pretty well. Compensation is very performance-based. Your bonus is typically going to be a lot more than your take home, similar to finance. I'm curious, how do you want me to quantify? You want to just start throwing out some numbers?
If you feel comfortable, sure.
I feel comfortable. I would say at the early career in consulting in a major city, you know, you're probably looking at anywhere from $85,000 to $120,000 a year as a base for, you know, early 3, 4, 5 years into your career, with maybe a 30 to 50% bonus on top of that at the end of the year. I don't know anybody in my industry who's worried about money, who's worried about making rent, who's worried about making the mortgage. It's probably not the route to becoming, staying in consulting for your whole career is probably not the route to becoming ultra wealthy. It's definitely, you're going to be well compensated for your entire career, you know, probably topping out at $450,000 to $500,000 a year, including, you know, equity bonuses in your company and stuff. I think the place where folks come to consulting to really high net worth situations is in what's called their exit. So most folks work in consulting looking for exit opportunities, and they have opportunities, you know, as they come to exit consulting and either move to private equity in their chosen industry or to move directly into the industry. You know, I'm an aerospace and defense consultant, so I have a colleague who just left aerospace consulting for a job at United Airlines, stuff like that. Again, probably not a way to get ultra wealthy, but you know, folks look to make the move into venture capital or private equity after building a consulting background. I would say consulting is an amazing thing to have on your resume for almost any job. Folks know the firms because they work with them every day. They work with Deloitte, they work with Accenture, they work with McKinsey, they work with Bain. And I'd say it's the opportunity, it provides a ton of opportunities to go make a ton of money. But staying in the industry, you won't worry about living. You'll be able to, you know, your kids will go to college. I hope that gave you a decent look.
Yeah, that was great. So this next question is, what would you look for skills-wise or personality-wise in a fresh graduate that you're looking to hire or to see them succeed in his or her career? What would be useful?
Fresh graduate, that's a loaded word. That has a different meaning in like Indonesia and India, because I know because Accenture is so big over there. But a fresh graduate, like in consulting especially, man, everything's teachable. Like the hard skills are very teachable. Data science is teachable. You know, different analysis skills are teachable, you know, agile, you know, running a scrum, whatever. Like I can teach anybody how to do that stuff. I'm looking for quality communication skills in consulting. I'm looking for somebody who we can sit here like this and be an engaging, interesting person to talk to and who can speak confidently and speak confidently and comfortably with people in positions of authority. Because in the consulting world, like it's a very weird place where you can have like a 26, 27 year old person like talking directly to a C-suite member of a Fortune 500 company. And that not everybody can do that without sounding like an idiot or sounding like they're obviously making stuff up. So I'm looking for somebody with a confident presence who seems sharp enough to be able to learn. Those are the two things where I'm like, if you can do those things, I think I can make you a good consultant. Cause like I can teach you how to build a freaking PowerPoint deck, you know, like, but I can't teach somebody how to talk to people.
I think you were talking about this a little bit earlier with relation to following your passion and how with work-life balance, it doesn't really feel like a task if that coincides with your passion. What is your opinion on following your passion? And do you think it's really, really necessary to have a successful career?
No, I don't think it's necessary to have a successful career. I think it's necessary to have like a happy life. I think you can be good at a job you hate. I know people who are good at jobs they hate, like, and they have reasons, you know, they have reasons for it. You know, they have six kids and they're like, hey man, I love pottery. I think of St. Mark's great ceramics program. I love pottery and I would love to be a full-time ceramicist, but that's unlikely to pay the bills for six kids. Not impossible, but it's unlikely. So as far as like, you know, do I think everybody should run and follow their passion? I would love to say yes, but you have to remember the realities of your situation. That being said, if you have the option, if you have the freedom and luxury to do that, then I 100% counsel do it. So my answer to your question is, if you have the freedom and luxury to pursue your passions, you need to do so. You owe it to yourself. But I temper that with a message that like you need to have an honest conversation with yourself if you are in a position to do that. Because then it makes a lot of sense. Like, hey, man, go work as a bookkeeper 40 hours a week and run your passion on the side. Do your passion on the side. Do what makes you happy outside of work. And then do that job that's 9 to 5. And you don't think about it. you don't think about it between the hours of 9 to 5 a.m. Monday through Friday. Like, I recommend that highly. But I think the answer is have the conversation with yourself. Can I do this?
Do you think that passion is something innate or that can be developed through like pursuing something for a very long time?
That's a good question. I don't find the answer. Look, if you hate doing math, if you hate math, I don't think that I find it unlikely, though not impossible, that somebody is going to develop a passion for mathematics as they keep going through calc one, calc two, differential equations, whatever. If you find something that you are passionate about, when it hits you and you're like, I love doing this and I don't want to stop doing this, like, I think that's a lucky thing. I think that is innate. I to answer your question, I think passion is innate. I think you know to recognize it when you're like, I love doing this and I don't care that it's 7 p.m. Like, I'm going to keep working because I like this. This is fun for me. And if you find something like that, you're a lucky guy or girl, and you need to hold on to it to whatever extent that you can, because it's important to remember, even if you have a job that you're wildly passionate about, like I had with the Marines, you're not going to love every second. There were days and weeks where I hated it and it sucked, but there were parts that just made it 100% worth it, man. There, and you recognize that, and you shouldn't use, man, I had a bad day as a metric for like, this isn't my passion anymore. You know, LeBron has bad days on the basketball court. Lewis Hamilton has bad seasons in Formula One. Like, there's going to be bad times, but if you have something that lights your fire like that, hang on to it as hard as you can.
So how would you define success in your field, both now and when you were a Marine?
Success in the field?
Yeah. Like a successful consultant is the following.
Yeah. A successful consultant drives revenue for their firm. That it's really great that way, that it is a pretty, like, if you want to talk just hard success, you know, even if you're an independent consultant and you own your own consulting firm, you are successful if you drove revenue, if you sold work. If you sold work that people are happy with, and that led to more work, like, you did a good job. So you have right there what's called a KPI, a known performance indicator. Like, you brought in cash, you did a good job, your bonus is going to reflect it. Congratulations. That is the quantitative answer to that question. The qualitative answer to that question is, did I do work that the client was happy with? Consulting is a service business. It is. Your definition of success, if you think I made a great project here, I built a great software application, and the client's like, I hate this, I can't use it, you failed. So it is a customer satisfaction driven business, which makes it really fun sometimes and really bad sometimes. As a military officer, I think it's similarly simple. Did you take care of the people who you were in charge of? First, were they safe? Did they come home? Were they able to, you know, were they able to keep living their lives based on your leadership? And number two, you know, did they grow underneath you? And did they become better humans? Did they become better Marines? Did they become better Americans? And I want to say that with a massive, massive, massive qualifier, which was, I served in a peacetime Marine Corps and did not deploy to a combat environment during my time in the military. And that is my definition of success, because I was in a peacetime Marine Corps where I did not deploy to a combat environment. In a combat environment, though, that definition of success changes. And I don't feel comfortable speaking on that, as it's just not part of my experience.
So this next question is like, how has this profession changed in the last two decades with the arrival of new technology, social media? And you're talking about like, you don't have to travel as much as you would have had to in the past, or you can work from home. But aside from those, what differences do you see?
Aside from COVID?
Yeah.
Because COVID changed the entire industry, like, wildly. We and our clients all realized, holy Moses, I don't have to pay for hotels for 12 people every week for 7 weeks, and flights and food. And we can just do this over Zoom and Microsoft Teams. Like, that is a huge change. And we don't have to be on the road for 50 weeks out of the year anymore. Like, whoo, awesome. I would say non-COVID, companies like Accenture, and here I'll focus on like IT consulting because that's what I know. I don't know strategy. I don't know mergers and acquisitions. I know technology consulting. The world has become significantly more collaborative. And when I say that, I mean you need to have access in a lot of places for a lot of people. So cloud storage has become huge because you can't rely on local servers. You can't rely on local work. You need external collaboration services. You need external data storage. You need to be in the cloud. You need to be in a universally accessible place in corporate America. I would also say that the advent of automation technology has changed so much about how corporate America operates. That's actually the area that I'm focused in, is on process automation, machine learning, and AI. We not only have a responsibility to develop that technology and make companies operate smoother with automated processes, but there is also a twin to that, which is, hey, we need to be able to maintain jobs for people if they are made redundant by automation. There needs to be an opportunity to upskill workers so that, you know, you're not coming in and developing an automation that's immediately wiping out an entire department. Like, you, in my opinion, that's not a great outcome. Like, there needs to be opportunities to upskill people to work in a world that is going to be increasingly driven by automation, by machine learning capabilities, and on a larger scale by artificial intelligence, which I think anyone with any familiarity in the field can recognize is a really scary thing. And it's the responsibility of these engineers and implementers of that to make sure that it's being done safely and responsibly. You know, this is getting a little niche here, but like, I think AI safety is going to be a huge part of the next 50 years. And I think you can find, you know, there's some reading that you can do that is pretty terrifying on how capable automation and artificial intelligence will become in a little while. And I just say that because that's the field that I happen to work in. Those are the two big ones, I think, are automation and basically for external collaboration, because the world is really shifting to working from home. I don't know what it looks like in 30 years, but I think a lot of commercial real estate is going to get unused. People don't want to work in the office. I like working in the office a little bit, but people as a whole, companies are not going to want to work in the office.
The final question I have is, do you have any final comments before we wrap up? Any advice for high schoolers or anyone in general considering what career paths to continue in college and beyond, or how to explore these career paths?
Yeah, I would say I don't want to offer like a platitude that's just like work hard. I would say you need to be networking now, and do not be afraid to reach out to people cold, whether it's on LinkedIn, whether it's via email. Like, if somebody went to St. Mark's that works at a company that you want to work for, they're going to talk to you. Like, you put rising St. Mark's senior in your subject line, I'm like, yeah, whatever this kid wants, for sure. So if you reach out to another St. Mark's alum, like 99 times out of 100, they'll talk to you as long as you want to. So that's a great place to start for a St. Mark's guy looking to be in a certain career. Because what a lot of people don't do is they're too scared to reach out to people they don't know. You're not, clearly. But I think that's my number one piece of advice is start networking now.
All right. Thank you for taking time to address all these questions. I can definitely say I've learned a lot from this discussion.
Thanks to everyone who's listening for choosing to spend your valuable time with this podcast. I hope you found this useful. To get notified about future episodes, please subscribe or follow Pathfinder 101 on Spotify, SoundCloud, Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Also, please visit Pathfinder101.com for more career-related information not included in the podcast. If the blog or podcast adds some value to you, please like and share it with your friends and colleagues. Thanks so much for your time, and have a great rest of your day.